Is marriage good? Well, the answer might depend on the person you ask. Here's what the Associated Press said a few years ago in an article I clipped from the Arizona Daily Star. 3 mornings a week when Becky Lung gets ready for work, her boyfriend is just getting home from his overnight job. When her mother drops hints about her twin sister's marriage, she laughs it off. And when she thinks about getting married herself, she worries first about her career. Lung is 27 and cohabits in Portland with her boyfriend, but has no plans to wed. A reflection of the broader cultural shift in the U.S. today away from traditional marriage. According to U.S. Census Bureau data in 2010, married couples found themselves in a new position below 50% of households in America. Clearly, many are finding it better not to marry. I find that highly interesting in light of Jesus being asked a marriage question during his earthly ministry. He didn't teach a great deal on marriage, but when he did address it, he was clear about it. And when he was asked, you know, what reasons is it okay for us to divorce our wives? He told his disciples, you know, listen, it wasn't like this at the beginning. You know, it was one man, one woman, one flesh for a lifetime. That's the way it is. And it's better then for people not to get married than to divorce like this. This is what the disciples say in reaction to Jesus' teaching on marriage. I think it's very interesting. This is Matthew 19, verse number 8. He said unto them, okay, let me back up and do verse 7. This is what the disciples ask. Why did Moses then command to give her a writing of divorcement and to put her away? And he said unto them, Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. Don't be doing this. Don't divorce. Now look what the disciples say next. Very, very insightful. His disciples say unto him, if this is the case of a man be so with his wife, it is good, it is not good to marry. Oh, they came to the same conclusion that people are today. Better not get married. If that's the terms, I'm not up for it. Better not to marry. And you know, it isn't just with people outside the church, but people even inside the church, people even in marriages, might be thinking in the back of their minds, you know, maybe it's not good to be married. I mean, maybe it's good if I'm not married just to stay that way. Paul, in fact, didn't he recommend that in the New Testament? You know, I recommend that you just stay the way I am. And then some of us who are married, we're thinking, well, really, what did God have in mind when he decided he was going to put two people so opposite in the same house? What was God thinking? You might be thinking then, it might have been better had I never gotten married. So even in those who are in committed relationships trying to do things God's way, we have doubts in our minds from time to time. Was marriage or is marriage a good idea? What was God thinking? Well, I want to take you now back all the way to what Jesus referred to in Matthew 19. He said it wasn't so at the beginning. He says this at, what is it, verses 3 or 4 of Matthew 19. He tells his disciples, go back to the beginning. That's what I want to do with you. I want to encourage you, go with me to Genesis chapter 2. How was it at the beginning? Now, I want you to think through this, and I don't want you, if you've heard messages on Genesis 2, I don't want you to rule this out and think I've already heard this a million times. What I'm about to share, I'm pretty sure you haven't ever heard quite this way before. That doesn't mean I'm trying to be novel. I'm just going to take a different approach on this passage probably than you've heard in your lifetime. But the point is, everything that God made on the earth in the 6 days of creation, he said what about? After the first day, the evening and the morning, he said what about the day? It was good. Everything he made, he said it was good. And in chapter number 1 and verse number 27, and he made them in his image, both male and female. 4 verses later, we read in Genesis chapter 1 verse 31, and God saw that everything that he had made, behold, it was very good. and the evening and the morning were the sixth day. That is after he created man and the woman. That we don't read about the woman in detail till chapter 2. She was already made when God said it was good. Just mark that down, men. She is good. God did say that about her at the end of day number 6. Marriage then is not an afterthought. It's always been part of the thought of God. It's always been part of his plan for you to be married to someone who in many ways is opposite you, but is a compliment to you. It is God's idea from the very beginning. And it is a plan that I want to say from the outset, it was a plan for your good. God wasn't thinking, I know how to torment a guy. I'll put somebody in his life that makes him pick up his socks and fold his laundry. God wasn't thinking that, and neither should you. God intended this woman to be for your good. And we see it right here in the very first wedding that takes place in all of history. It's in Genesis chapter 2 between Adam and the woman that God makes called Eve. Well, since marriage is God's idea and God was up to something good and still is up to something good, then there is a way for you to find out how to make your marriage good too. It is possible, therefore, even in the sin-cursed earth in which we live, to have a good marriage. And I want Christian couples to have good marriages. It may not be easy. There may be challenges, but it is possible because God's plan was for marriage to be good, for you to have a good marriage too. Well, how is that? Well, I want to unfold for you some clues that the text suggests what we should be doing to cooperate with God's good plan. God can have a good plan. That doesn't mean we carry it out very well. Some of you know what I'm talking about. Just because the boss says this is the way it does, doesn't mean the employees are going to do it the right way. Well, God has a good plan for marriage, and he wants you to employ yourselves in that wedding or in that marriage in a good way. So here are some things you can do, I believe, that Genesis chapter 2 talks about that would make your marriage good. Probably make most marriages better if we did more of what we're talking about today. So what are they? Well, let's go first to Genesis chapter 2 and verse number 18. Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, we're going to find God's first thoughts about marriage. Genesis 2, verse 18, and the Lord God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make an helpmeet for him. God's first thought about marriage was, it was not good. Now, I want you to understand that in every place where we see the word good in the Bible, from Genesis 1:1 all the way up to Genesis chapter 2, just before verse 18, everything he said about the earth he made was what? It was good. It was good. It was good. This is the first time God says something wasn't good. Now, it's puzzling to me. I would have liked this verse to be in chapter 3 after the fall of man into sin. But God says even before man fell into sin, there was something not good. There was something not right. It wasn't good that man should trail through life alone. God is also telling me something here. Man can't find complete satisfaction or solace on earth just in a relationship with God alone. God in his plan knew that he needed somebody next to him with skin on, someone to whom he could relate on an earthly level. Now, I'll say by a side here, some do journey through life single, and we have some single folk in our church today. This is not God's usual plan, however. Some do receive grace to go through life without a spouse. But we know Jesus went through life without a spouse. Paul may have never been married. We're not sure. At least when he wrote most of the New Testament, he wasn't. He may have been married and separated. We're not sure. But two of the outstanding individuals in the New Testament didn't go through life or most of life with a spouse. So I'm not suggesting marriage is for all, but it certainly is for most. Now, God knew most men couldn't make it through life very well without a woman. That's why he had a marriage in mind and a woman that he created. There is, then, something here beyond the fact that man needs a wife or man needs a completer or man needs a helper, which we're going to get to in just a moment. The point I want to make is if a man is being alone is not a good thing, a man with a wife must be a good thing in God's mind. So if I want more good in my marriage, I need to be, number one, more with my spouse. So that's the first point. Be more with your spouse. If man's weakness is, I'm alone without a completer, without a spouse, then God's plan must be for me to be with that spouse to find my completion and to find the goodness that God intends. I need to be more there, as the slide indicates. Already I anticipate some objections to that because many have allowed distance in their marriages to grow. And it happens slowly over the years. It might even seem at this point impossible to find time for the person that you're wed to because of your schedules or because of different pressures on your home. But here God really is tipping us off to how it all's supposed to work. If I want my marriage to be good, and God created marriage so that man wouldn't be alone, then something has gone awry when I'm alone and married. I should not be alone and married. I should be more with my spouse. Let me use a modern scholar maybe to point this out to you. Her name is Linda Waite. She wrote a book, The Case for Marriage. In the book, she writes some words that are actually pretty shocking coming from a secular educator. She writes, quietly, with little fanfare, a broad and deep body of scientific literature has been accumulating that affirms that what Genesis teaches, it is not good for man to be alone. No, nor woman neither. In virtually every way that social scientists can measure, married people do much better than the unmarried or divorced. They live longer, healthier, happier, sexier, and more affluent lives. Secular person saying, it is good if the man is not alone. So that indicates I ought to be more with my spouse. Some of you would look at a quote like this and go, yeah, duh, I mean, the Bible's true. But that really isn't the point I'm trying to make. Yeah, the Bible is true from the very first words, and everything it says about marriage is right. It is better for people to be married. In the long run, this is God's will for most people. But she is actually tipping us off to something else here. Scientifically, she's saying to be with a spouse is better for my life in almost every way people can measure goodness or betterness. Be with your spouse. But truth be told, you can live in the same house and not be with your spouse. Many live very separate lives, even in the same home. In the average American home, what happens? Both partners are out working. They work all day. They come home. They brush up against one another as they reheat yesterday's dinner in the microwave so they have something to eat that night. After they finish exchanging who's going to handle the problem with the kid at the school the very next day or the problem with the furnace that just went out, they both get up part ways. He goes and watches the evening news or the video or the TV stream that he likes to see. She goes and gets on the computer so she can do her little internet searches or her Facebook, you know, catch up. And they live very separate lives, except for an occasional brush up against one another in the kitchen. Now, this is a problem because what it is doing is sabotaging the goodness of marriage. God designed for me to be more with my spouse so I am not alone. And if I am alone in my marriage, it's because I need to be doing something to be more with my spouse. We're so caught up in our me things that we have little time for we things. And as a result, we struggle. Many marriages are starving for couple time. Two people are engaged in conversation, not just passing time, but trying to see into another person's soul and learn about a person and love on and make new discoveries into that person. So every marriage struggles with not having enough we time. We need to be more with our spouse. That's the point I'm trying to make. Even the good things can crowd out the best things. So here's what I'm talking to you about just by way of application to think through your life a little bit. Some of you are working jobs that actually keep you away from your spouse. In the introductory illustration I used, Becky was working days and her partner was working nights. And they were passing each other at breakfast and at dinner. Not a good scenario. Change jobs. There are things more important than making money. You'll hear this if you are around me any bit of time. You're going to hear this. It isn't about how much money you make in life. You can make all the money in the world. You can make more money than me in the world or any other person in the world and still not be happy. The secret to happiness in life is not how much money you make, but the quality of the relationships in your life. You got to work on that. And the chief after God is your relationship with your spouse. And if you're missing out on we time, then something has to give. You ought to give up your job. Well, I don't know how we could make it if I gave up my job. Find another job. Pray. There is a Father in heaven who promises he will provide for you. We even just sang about it. all my hand needed, you have provided. God will provide for you. Put your couple time first. We need more we time. And our marriages are struggling because we have allowed our lives to be very separate, even though we live in the same house. Here's another thing we could do. Some of us just need to change how we do our time at home. As I suggested just a moment ago, sometimes we get on our phones. Some of us can't even sit down and get through a whole meal without scrolling the new text coming in from so-and-so about such-and-such. Really? You need to be, men, you need to be more in your home when you're at home. Am I being too in your face? You know, we need this in our culture. We are so media saturated. It is, you're more married to your media than you are to your spouse. You need to just kick some of it out. You need to turn some of it off. Some of you are on call, and I don't understand that. Some of you have businesses, and you need to keep your phone on. But more of us just need to turn it off or leave it behind so we can have more we time. You know, some of you have husbands who love hanging out in the garage, you know. They just love having grease up to their elbows, and they love, you know, tinkering with their cars, and they'd rather be on their backs looking up at the belly of a car than almost any other place in the world. Wives, if you have a wife like that, then you need to figure out how to spend more time in the garage with your husband. You know what I'm talking about? You're at home, be at home, be with your spouse. You know, some of you have family members who like birding. I'm picking on birders today. I'm not a birder, all right? So I'm going to pick on birders, right? Hey, if your husband loves birding, then you ought to order a subscription to Birding Magazine and find out all you can so that you are with your spouse. Dear old couple I've shared with you before, Harold and Eunice Hatfield, in a former ministry I had. You know what? They did all kinds of things together. They both liked photography. He liked photography. She got into photography. They both got good at it, entered competitions. They travel all over the state taking pictures of stuff so they could enter competitions. But they did that so that they could be with each other. They're thinking of their home time, how to do things together. So often we're in the home and we're thinking, well, you know, I got to do this, and I'm going to go clean up the backyard, you know, and you go clean up the garage. And we're working in two separate places. What are we thinking? What are we thinking? All right, we need an adjustment here. God said it's not good for the man to be alone. If you're at home and you're alone, you have a problem. That is if you're married. That was a little bit sharper than I intended to say it. Listen, if she's working in the bedroom and she's on a sewing project, go read a book in the same room. Be with your spouse. This is what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting we need to be more with our spouse. God designed marriage so that you wouldn't be alone. If you're alone, you need to change something. That's what I'm suggesting. Find we time. My wife started watching football. She used to think that football was just a bunch of men running around and tackling each other so they could get grass on their jerseys. All right? That's what she thought the whole point of the game was. When I actually told her there was a strategy and that the two teams are working against each other, she's like, oh, wow, this really has a point. And I said, obviously, I can't believe you went your whole life and didn't understand that. But you know what? Over the years, we've been married for almost 18 years now, and she's watched a number of football games with me. Now, she doesn't get into all of them, but she's done that. Why? She's trying to do we time. And we need to think we time when we're at home. So when your spouse is home, resist the urge to go away. Do your own thing. If he's there, think of how you can make it we time. It's a simple thing, but it would raise your quality of marriage and the goodness of your home exponentially. All right, let's look a little further and see what else we can discover. In Genesis chapter 2, God says it's not good for a man to be alone. So if the man is with his spouse, that's a good thing. That's what we've concluded so far. Reading on, verse number 18. I will make him a helpmeet for him. Now look at verse 20. And Adam gave names to all the cattle and to the fowl of the air and to every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found a helpmeet for him. Two verses split apart by a verse in the middle, but both say, I'm going to make a helpmeet for him. I'm going to make a helper. Now, the word helpmeet, some of you have bumped into this before, means one who is suited to him or complements him or stands opposite. Like a waffle iron has two sides to make the waffle, so a man has to have another side to the waffle or the waffles don't come out just right. You have to have a completer. This is the idea of the word, a complement to him. The woman is his completer. She is his helper. So think this through. if God provided a woman, so number one, man wouldn't be alone, then I need to be with my spouse. If God provided the woman to be a helper, that means some of the goodness in marriage is found when my spouse is helping me and I am helping her. Help is a key concept then. And it brings us to our second point in the message. Another clue about good marriage there. Therefore, number two, let's scroll, please. Do more to help your spouse. Do more to help your spouse. Well, how do you help your husband? I think wives get this. Most of the wives do better at this than men do. Marriage is about finding fulfillment in the betterment of your spouse and not in yourselves. She may not know how to solve formulas, write computer software, or compute ledgers, or write sermons. But she stands with her man to make him the best he can on any given day at his business. When she does her job well, it will make him a better employee. He will shine brighter. He will outpace his competitors because of her help. You know, we see this time and again in history. Let me give you a couple examples. You know, one of the premier examples that popped immediately into my mind when it came to helping a husband was Eleanor Roosevelt. Where would Franklin Delano Roosevelt have been without Eleanor? Because of his condition and his polio, especially during his third term when his health was failing, who was the world ambassador going and meeting prime ministers and presidents all over the world? It was Eleanor. She was always on the airplane, flying around. She knew more people in the world than her husband did. Amazing testimony of a woman. She just helped. Hey, was that something she signed up for? I'm going to marry Franklin so I can be the first lady. I don't think that ever crossed her mind. But it happened. And you know what? She was all there. She was all there to help her man succeed. That's real testament to her character. She still stands out as a pillar, as an example of a person who lived to help her man. Not long ago, I read Catherine Marshall's biography of her pastor husband, Peter Marshall, who for 2 years in 1946 and 1947 served as the chaplain to the U.S. Senate in Washington, D.C. For 10 years, he was the pastor of New York Avenue Presbyterian Church in Washington, D.C., one of the largest churches in Washington, D.C. You know what she did? She just helped her man raise their one son, Peter, and at points in the book, she confides that even at times she helped edit and even write his sermons. I thought that's cute. That doesn't happen in my house. She does not write my sermons. Now, she critiques my sermons, but that's another thing, all right? She doesn't write them. Both of these examples, and we could give others, of outstanding men who led the way in their generation, and they were that way because somebody said, I'm willing to be the other half of the waffle iron, and if nobody knows my imprint or my stamp, I'm going to make him look good. Help your husband. You want your marriage to go well? Help your husband. You know, most men need help. You know, men on the outside often put up this very hard, stern, strong, impenetrable, nothing is going to get to me, I'm tough. But inside, we're a bunch of wimps. All right? This is true of most men. We're very weak emotionally, and we're attacked often in our workplace for not measuring up and supervisor not liking this and that. One of the biggest things you can do as a wife to help your husband is you just get there and you help hold up that heart when it wants to go flat. And you just say, I'm there for you. I believe in you. And if you can't do it for this employer, I think we should go find another one because you're worth it. And you're strong and you can. Measurable help when women see that as their mission. You'd make your marriage good if you just thought, how can I help him? Just this morning, my wife was telling me of an example of a woman who lived with a little acronym on her refrigerator to remind him about helping her husband. That was her duty. Just put that in front of you somehow. What can I do today to help him? Men, it's your turn. You thought this is good because you've enjoyed the last part of the sermon, right? But, you know, we often look at Genesis chapter 2 as one-sided. You know, she's to help me, you know. She feeds me grapes while I'm fanned by my kids and life is wonderful. This is not the Bible picture, right? The Bible picture, hey, listen, if she is to complete you, you are also to complete her. She needs your help. She needs you to come home and say, how can I help, honey? In what ways can I be a help to you? She can't bear the burden of the home alone. I know how it is. You get home, you're tired. You put in a hard day, and you have needs. But if you want a good marriage, you'll learn to help your wife. So how could you help? Could you help by picking up groceries on your way home? Could you help by picking up a broom and sweeping the floors? Could you help by putting the kids to bed early? Could you start the laundry? Could you iron your own business shirts? What could you do to help? After your wife recovers from her heart attack and falling over on the floor when you offer to do something, there'll be a new sparkle in her eyes because a man realizes his wife needs help too. A wife picked up some paperwork. It was tax time. Some paperwork her husband was putting together to take to the CPA to get their taxes done. And when she was looking at the forms, one of the first questions on the forms was, has your marital status changed? And after it, he had circled yes. She was alarmed. As far as she knew, they had no plans to separate or to divorce. So she slid her finger a little bit further over, and beside the word yes, he had written older, better. In fact, they were just about to celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary. And isn't that the way it's supposed to be? If we're working for each other, if we're helping each other, the older it gets, the better it can be. Is marriage a good thing? I think it is. It is in the mind of God. Would it so be in my mind too? And it could be if I'd be more with my spouse and I'd be more of a help to my spouse. I could have a better marriage than I do today. There are things you could do. Hey, if you're as ignorant as me sometimes, you might have to ask your wife, honey, how is it that I could help you? But that's a start. You might ask your wife that and then get out a pad of paper and a pen and start writing. Men, do you remember the last time you did a project with someone? I did a project with someone recently. It was more than I could do on my own. I needed a second man, so I enlisted the help of a friend. Help me with this. And so we're working on it, and he's like, you gotta do this, and you gotta put a little bit more on this, and you know, and he's like, let me do it. And yeah, and so together we got the job done. And you know what we did afterwards? We went inside, had a cup of coffee, and actually had a plate of dinner together. There's such a neat feeling when you finish a job, you're all done, and the sense of satisfaction comes over you because you worked on it together. You both get to share in the joy of a completed project. God hardwired us that way, that there's joy when work is done. And friend, I want to say that ought to be a chief joy that you constantly get in marriage. You're working together. Hey, we just finished, honey. Another thing done. We just graduated another kid. Woohoo! Another thing done. We just had another kid leave home. Yeah! Job well done. You know what I'm saying? That's the way it ought to be. We're working together. And then we can celebrate the joys of a job completed when it's all through. This is the way it ought to be. And if I worked with my spouse and saw myself as helping her and she helping me, and we really had a passion to be a helpmeet to my spouse, we'd find more good in our marriage. Be more with your spouse, and then be more of a help to your spouse. And so being, you're going to back yourself right into a good marriage, the same way a Mercedes backs into an air-conditioned garage. All right. Number three, be more with your spouse. Number two, do more to help your spouse. Number three, share more with your spouse. Share more with your spouse. Let's read on. Genesis chapter 2, verse number 21. The Bible says, the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam. And he slept, and he took one of the ribs and closed up the flesh instead thereof. God put Adam to sleep so he could take out a rib. You know the story. You've heard it since Sunday school, right? The reason God had to put Adam to sleep, you've heard before, right? Was so that he didn't get hurt or grossed out by seeing his flesh opened up to remove the rib. But the real reason God put Adam to sleep was so that God didn't get any pointers on how to make the woman. See, I told you there was a new take in the sermon on Genesis chapter 2. You know, this really is true of every woman. You didn't get to hand design her and package her all together just the way you wanted. You know what God did for Adam? He made her just the way he wanted. He knew Adam would need. And then he took her to Adam and said, here she is. And God did that with everyone who's married in this room. You got to look the survey the field over. But when it came down to all the details, it's just the way God wanted her to be for you. You might change details here and there, but that's okay. God wasn't looking for pointers. He was giving you a spouse that he knew you needed. So the second thing I want you to see here in the text is this, that we need to, the third thing we need to see is to share more with my spouse. Because of God designing her to meet just what you needed, the Bible says that the two of them became one flesh. This is in verse 24. Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother, shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Something they could never be on their own. God in the mystery of marriage, and the wisdom of marriage, made one flesh out of two people. I've been pondering this. I've heard a lot of things about one flesh. You know, the people explain. I don't want to get into all this. I just want to share some thoughts to you, meditation that I've had on this particular passage. What does it mean to be one flesh with another person? Well, of course it means physical fellowship. I don't know where that is. The slide doesn't look correct. Physical fellowship. Physical fellowship. The text doesn't say that they were one spirit. How many women wish they could be a kindred spirit with their husband? All right, don't raise your hands. All right? How many couples wish they could have one mind? But the text doesn't say one mind or one spirit. It says one flesh. It really emphasizes the physical part of marriage. And not just the physical act, that's not what I'm talking about. But marriage is a very physical thing. I have a physical being moving into my house who shares my physical address, who uses all of my physical possessions, and who together we make a physical creation called a child that shares a little bit of both of us. That marriage is very physical. And I don't think we should pass over that quickly. In fact, the text kind of just pushes the physicality of marriage at you. What does it say in verse number 22 about how God made the woman? Look back at verse 22. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from man made he a woman and brought her unto the man. You know, God didn't have to use anything. God creates out of what? Nothing. He didn't need a rib. He wasn't panicked like, where am I going to get the matter for this? It didn't occur to God. But he did want to make her in such a way that she was of very much the same essence of the man, had the same genes as the man, the DNA and bodily makeup. She is not wholly other. She is wholly the same as the man. Physically, God made the man, made the woman from the man. Suggests a physical aspect to the marriage. Look at verse 23. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. First thing Adam says about the woman when he sees her is like, what's he say? She's gorgeous. She has a wonderful personality. I love how she does her hair. He doesn't do that. He says she's bone of bone, flesh of flesh. What's he emphasizing? Physicality again. Physical being in front of me that matches up to me. Marriage then is a physical union that touches every area of our lives, as I've just suggested. In his book, The Mystery of Marriage, I think this is the next slide. Let's move on. Mystery of Marriage. All right. Written by Mike Mason. He'd been married for 2 years when he wrote this book and wrote these words. A marriage partner may be compared to a great tree growing right up through the center of one's living room. It is something that is just there and it's huge and everything has been built around it. And wherever one happens to be going, to the fridge, to bed, to the bathroom, out the front door, the tree has to be taken into account. You know what he's saying? Marriage is physical. This person touches me everywhere and in every place, and it's just a little bit too intense sometimes. That's the way marriage is. It's very physical in every way. So marriage forces, therefore, because of the way it touches us physically in so many ways, it forces us to share everything with your spouse. And that sharing culminates when the two of you together are able to produce children who become a child that represents both of you at the same time. What this means is that the more I share, the more good I'll discover in marriage. The more I withhold, the less I share, the more I sabotage my marriage. If I want a good marriage, I need to do more sharing, not less. Too many couples have become hermits in their homes. At some point, the husband wearies of hearing his wife share her 30,000 words between 5 and 10 p.m. And at points along the way, she wearies of sharing herself with the man after the lights go down. And when the sharing dies, the marriage dies. So God designed them to be one flesh, which forces sharing all the time, wherever I happen to be. If you want a good marriage, share more. But it isn't just about physical fellowship. I do have a second thought here. Go to the next slide, please. Oh, ran out of time. I must have not edited that slide. Letter B is secure fellowship. Letter B is secure fellowship. The chapter ends with these words. And they were both naked, the man and the woman, and they were not ashamed. What's the point of that? And I know the natural thought is to go to what we just talked about, the physical aspect of marriage. But I think there's more intended here. The fact that they're together and not ashamed suggests they had nothing to hide. They were open with each other, at ease in each other's company. They had no secrets and no fears of exploitation. You know what? The very next chapter, all that's gone. Verse 25 sets us up for chapter 3, where a serpent is more subtle than any beast of the field, comes in and says, hey, has God said you can't have every tree of the garden? Hey, look at this tree, which is in the midst of the garden. Look at its fruit. Eve sees it. Hey, it's good for food, pleasant to the eyes, desirable to make one wise. She took of the fruit and did eat, and she gave her husband, and he did eat. What did they do? What was the immediate result of that? Shame! And we know that. Why? Because they're sowing fig leaves and trying to hide themselves. As far as we know, there are no other people on the planet. They had to hide from each other and from God with the fig leaves. Why? The shame of sin. Terrible. But you know, there's something neat about marriage. And God says it's good because when the two are alone, there is a shameless identification and a shameless sharing. They could be open and honest and at ease with each other. And this is what God intends for every marriage to achieve. To some degree, though corrupted by the fall, still possible for people to be open and honest with the spouse. When a spouse is free to share all the naked truth about himself and know that she or he is not going to be taken advantage of in any way, it builds trust and deepens togetherness. This is God's plan for marriage. So if you want a good marriage, you got to remove the inhibitions you have towards sharing yourself with your spouse. The more sharing you do, the more good you'll find in your marriage. This way God designed it. One flesh. They were not ashamed. They were together. Not ashamed. Why? Because they were sharing everything and not afraid. You know, some of us bottle it up, hold it in, go it alone. This kind of strategy in life hurts a marriage. You know, the flip side is just as true. If you're not willing to listen to your spouse, open up her heart, share her concerns and pressures and burdens, you push your spouse away. You're sowing fig leaves and running out into the forest alone. To keep that from happening, share. This passage is preaching share. Have you ever heard someone preach sharing from Genesis chapter 2? I told you it would be different. It is about sharing. It's about one flesh. And I cannot be one flesh. And I cannot be with that person and not be ashamed unless I'm sharing openly, honestly, all the naked truth about myself. Some of us men need to... I know you're deep and complex and you have all these thoughts, but somehow you have to work them up out of the well of your soul and share them with your spouse, or you're hurting your marriage. Are you holding back? Are you hiding something within? It's time to take off the fig leaves. Make yours a marriage of constant sharing. I finish. Can marriage be good? Absolutely. Hey, God thought it was a good idea, and I'm not going to give up on it either. Marriage can be good. And it can be good when I'm as passionate about doing marriage the way God intended. How did he intend? Be more with my spouse so I'm not alone. Be more help to my spouse because that's what God designed me to be. And to share more with my spouse. Avoid hiding, concealing, holding on to. Need to open myself up to my spouse. All right? Let me finish with this story. I think that, yeah, there we are. Good. Slides are matching up again. All right. Let's imagine that you have booked a trip to Cancun airplane with your wife in the month of February. It's going to be the most romantic February 14 in your marriage. All right. I know, men, just picture it. Ladies, dream. It's not happening. Okay. You get up, you've packed all your playthings, Cancun, in a few days, you're going to be on the beach. It's going to be wonderful. You take off. When you land in the Swiss Alps. You have not packed for this occasion. Instead, it looks like this when you get off the airplane. It's a beautiful chalet. It's already been reserved, but somehow the travel agent got your package switched up with someone else's, and you're in the wrong place. Some people have this perception of marriage. You know, I signed up to go to Cancun, and I've ended up in the Swiss Alps. Wait a second. I did not sign up for this. There's cold and snow instead of swimming and sunshine. Well, think through this, and don't miss the analogy. After you buy winter clothes and learn how to ski, and learn how to talk in a new language, it really is possible to have as good a vacation in the Swiss Alps as it is in Cancun. And maybe your marriage didn't land you in the place you expected. But that doesn't mean it can't be good. God made marriage for your good, and yours can be as good as any if you'll work at it God's way. God help us. Let's pray.